Welcome to Sausage on a Fork, a podcast dedicated to the UK's longest-running children's drama programme, Grange Hill. My name's Neil, and in each episode, I'll interview a former cast member about their life before, during, and after their time on the programme. Okay, welcome to the latest episode of Sausage on a Fork, and I am absolutely delighted to say that I have been joined for this episode by none other than Terry Dwyer, who played Miss Adams. Terry, welcome to Sausage on a Fork.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. What we'll do, Terry, is we'll start this episode the way we start every episode. And if you can tell us how you got into acting.
A short skirt. do you know what? I was actually modelling at the time. And I'd moved to London, and there was this gorgeous model called Morgan, and she was from Scotland. And the then Mersey Television, as it was when I first started Hollyoaks, they were advertising for kind of, I think they were going via some model agency, some acting for Hollyoaks. And so I said, look, why don't I drive up? We're going to get paid expenses and we'll go out for dinner. We'll make a day of it. I never thought in a million years I would get it. And it wasn't that easy, you know. Four auditions later, I get a call from Dorothy Andrews because they'd called me up again. Of course, I didn't understand what the acting world was like. I mean, in the first audition, I sat there with my little model portfolio, and there was all these girls, beautiful girls from Italy Conti, which is a stage school in London, and they were actually slagging off the show. And I was like, why are you here if you don't like the show? Anyway, I just thought, oh, I'll just have a nice time. Went in with my little model portfolio and a short skirt. But on the fourth audition, because I didn't really understand the way that the industry was, and you get recalled and recalled, and they whittle the numbers down. And Dorothy said to my agent, she needs to come up. And I was like, oh, got a big client with Marks and Spencers. I can't let them down. And then Dorothy rang me and said, no, you've got to come up because it's between you and another girl. And I went up to Liverpool and Phil Redmond said, I've got some bad news. You've got the part and you need to start straight away. So I went to Topshop, bought loads of underwear and clothes, and I started straight away. And the next time I left Liverpool was 4 months later.
Wow.
Because my car needed taxing and all my documentation was in London. So I literally went to London, taxed my car, packed up my car, shut the door on my flat and moved to Liverpool. And yeah, Hollyoaks changed my life, really. I've got an awful lot to be thankful to Phil and Alexis Redmond and Joe Hallows, actually. You know, they really took a risk on me. I'd never done any acting. I was absolutely bloody awful. And you know what? For the first year, I just kept thinking, please don't sack me. I was just having the best time. I mean, what's not to love? You're in this amazing new show. It was a whole world I'd not been in. I was with these really cool people that were really fun to be around. Apart from being shocking, I loved every minute. And actually, I was really lucky because when I did decide to lead, it was because I wasn't feeling the way I did then. And I always promised myself that, you know, I feel that having a job like Hollyoaks was an absolute gift. And if it ever should not feel like that, then I deserve it. So when I left, Joe very kindly offered me all sorts of options, go for 6 months, do this, do that. And I just went, no. I've got to cut the ties. I mean, now, you know. Retrospectively, that might have been a good idea. But you know what? I had six really, really happy years there. I was back four times. And actually, great segue for you. I left and pretty quickly they offered me a part on Grange Hill.
Wow.
Yeah.
If we can just go back to Hollyoaks, though, because you were the first member of the Osborne family in Hollyoaks. Is that right? That I read that somewhere. That you were...
Now you're challenging me. So what happened? Sheba Roney, who was the lead, I just don't think she was having a good time. I don't really know the full story, but I know that she had a long contract. She wanted to leave. And I was brought in as her cousin. I don't know if she... What was her... I can't even remember her character, but... And of course, I was delirious to be there. They could have worked me all day, every day for as long as I was there, and I'd still be happy. But yeah, it was, do you know what? It was a
Yeah.
lovely job. And
Brilliant.
I think you're right. I think I probably was the first
Yeah, I
Osborne because
mean,
I actually remember them giving me the guy, Jimmy, who's obviously a dear friend of mine. I had to play opposite Jimmy, and yeah, it was me and Jimmy and me and this other guy.
right.
And you know, they asked for my feedback, but I didn't really have any sway. And yeah, then Darren came in, my brother Darren, and then he left, and then he came back again. Yeah,
Yeah.
but I had a great time. Do you know what? For somebody my age who wasn't in the industry prior, it was really good training ground. And actually, where I've ended up today, which is probably what we'll get onto later, it definitely prepared me and taught me an awful lot
Nice.
about the industry, about people, about, you know, really respecting other people's jobs on set.
Yeah.
And I've got lifelong friends. I mean, you know, I had my 50th last year, and I can't even believe I say that. And actually, I had all the gang up, you know, all my friends. In fact, Kerry Taylor, who played Lucy Benson, I'm going down to see her in a play in May, and I'm going to stay over with her. So we, you know, the original gang, there's a core group of us that are still really, really good
Yeah.
friends.
And was it you've mentioned Jimmy, was that who played Jack? Is I'm right
Yeah.
thinking that right? I've got a story about him. Obviously, I've lived all my life in Liverpool and all that. And one morning I was on the bus, and I used to work down in Netherley, which is South Liverpool. And it goes through Childwall Five Ways. Everyone, whether you lived in Liverpool or stayed in Liverpool, knows Childwall Five Ways.
Yeah.
And I'm on the bus one morning, and this fella gets on the bus, and I'd seen him run to the bus stop. He got on the bus stop, he gets out. I'm thinking, that's that fella off Hollyoaks. And it was Jimmy, it was Jack Osborne. I
Please
get
tell me he didn't get out his plastic money bag.
No, what he did get out was his script. And he sat on the bus reading his script. And then he gets off, and when he got off the bus, and he ran again. And I just thought, yeah, you're late for filming new
No, do you know what? He, because
movies.
I think way back when, I think Jimmy used to be a semi-pro, or he was something to do with Sheffield Wednesday, I think.
Right.
So even all the time, you know, he's always been very conscious about his health. So we'll go off and
Right.
run X amount of miles. He always came in, Terry, done 300 sit-ups today. And, you know, he was really conscious. But the reason I ask about the money back, oh my God, we were in this great soap. We were all earning good money. Jimmy, wherever we went, you know those plastic money bags you get from the bank?
Yeah.
He didn't have a wallet. So we'd be out in a bar and he'd pull out this bloody plastic money bag. And I'm like, what are you doing? And
Amazing.
he used it for years. But I mean, he's still one of my good friends, but he always, do you know what? I learned a lot from Jimmy because he'd been in the business a long time. He always bought the production girls biscuits. And he just really taught me, actually, that to have real respect for people that are behind the scenes, and to treat them nicely, because, you know, we're out there getting all the glory. But the reality is, and now I've been the other side, I really know this. The reality is that the people that work behind the scenes work much harder than us actors. You
Right.
know, we sit around waiting for to be called to set, go to set, do our bit, and then go back in a lovely, nice Winnebago. Or,
Yeah.
you know, I suppose the difficulty is probably losing your anonymity,
Right, yeah.
which some people really don't mind, and some people really value their privacy, particularly as they get older with children. So, but you know, the people behind the scenes don't get championed nearly enough.
And I suppose that's why whenever anyone wins any award, they always thank the crew, don't they? The crew's always the first people that they thank.
The good ones do. The
Right,
good
okay.
ones do, because actually they're the real heroes. We
Yeah.
get to, you know, pick up the trophy, the awards, and walk the red carpets, but they're the ones that are in before us and leave
Yeah.
after us.
Yeah. Brilliant. So Hollyoaks was like your very first thing, but you did like other things for Mersey TV and Phil Redden, because you did one of the Brookside made for video things, Double Take.
I did. Yeah, you've done your research well. I'm impressed. Yeah, that was great. Phil's idea of all these actors having alter egos. So, are you the person? Or because I think in soap, mostly, not all people, because you've had some greats, particularly in Corrie, that have been, oh gosh, the actress, the Sarah Lancashire played Raquel. She was so far removed, but I was probably pretty similar to Ruth, or she was certainly a part of me. Jimmy, who plays Jack, he's pretty similar. I think in soaps, there's always a part of yourself that is that character. So with Double Take, it was a real kind of juxtaposition, and we had the opportunity to play our character on screen and this massive alter ego off screen. And actually, it was the first time that I think he'd integrated the Brookside and the Hollyoaks together, because when we started, they were actually a bit mean to us, some of the Brookside lot, because all of a sudden they'd had this, place all to themselves, and they got these bloody little jump starts, these kids coming in and, all gorgeous and not knowing, well, some of them like me, not knowing what they were doing. And all of a sudden we were kind of like invading their space. So it kind of took a while for us to be harmonious, but we were eventually, and actually we became a really big family. In fact, Lewis Emmerich was in my last film. So, we do cross over a little bit. But yeah, I have done stuff. Phil and Alexis Redmond, who owned the then Mersey TV, they were just really, once you were in the family, they were really kind and they really looked after you. And actually, I've got an awful lot to thank them for, because I would undoubtedly not be where I am now had I not have had those early experiences.
Brilliant. And a couple of other things I wanted to talk to you about before we talk about Grange Hill. I don't usually talk about when people are on things as themselves, but I have to talk to you about Night Fever.
Oh my God.
Right? No, because like Night Fever for me, Night Fever was getting ready to go out television. Like I loved Night Fever, but not only that, Suggs is like my all-time hero. If anyone was to say to me, Neil, you can pick anyone in the world you want to meet, I'd say, well, I'd say Suggs or Hulk Hogan, to be honest. But Suggs, definitely. Tell me he's exactly what I imagine him to be like.
Oh, he's just gorgeous. They asked me a couple of times to do that, and I said, I don't know how many times I have to tell you I can't sing. I mean, Neil, I'm not joking. I cannot sing a note. And they were going, you don't have to. You just have to kind of group together. And I went on it, and he's just lovely. And I have a bit of a theory, because I've been really fortunate enough to meet some amazing people along the way. And I think people that, gosh, I'm going to really get myself in hot water here. Let me say it. My heroes and the uber talented people, in my opinion, have always been the most humble. And actually, and this is just in my opinion, it's the ones that probably haven't really got that naturally amazing talent in abundance that can be the divas.
I get you.
So actually, I should be a diva, really. But I'm
What
not. I'm not.
was Night Fever absolute bedlam to film because it looked like
No, but that,
it?
no. I think the point of the show is it was really high energy, and they really encouraged all that. But we were all, at the end of the day, you're making a show, you've got to get the content. So I think that's the thing. When you've been in the business, you kind of, you've got a job to do. You can have loads of fun, but part of that show, a massive part of that show, wouldn't have worked unless we looked like we were all having fun.
Brilliant.
So no, it was a great experience. I loved it.
And the other one was 60 Minute Makeover.
Oh, that's another great show I loved. Yes, I presented that. Again, that was great. That was off the back of Loose Women. And I got the opportunity to present the show. And you know what was amazing about that, Neil? It was really humbling. I remember this one girl, I wish I could remember her name, and she was in Manchester. And sometimes you get the dog nominating. We really know who wanted the makeover, but when she came back, she was just so excited that she had carpets. She said, I've never had carpets, I've never been able to afford them. And I think moments like that just made me realize why we did it. Of course, you got the odd one where wife did it for husband, but really wife was doing it for herself. But it was a really humbling job, and I had a great, so I had the northern team and the southern team. So I did X amount of shows in the north and then the south, and I had my little boy, and I who is now just turned 18, by the way. And I was doing a photo album for him for his 18th, you know, of all the memories along the way. And I was lucky enough that I could take him with me. My gorgeous then nanny just used to come, she just used to travel around with me, and she'd made him these like little white overalls. And
Oh,
I wish I had the episode, because at the one at the end of the episode where we all stand together as a crew, she walked him on and he was there in
brilliant.
my arms with the so I actually put a shot of him in the white
Brilliant.
overalls into the photo. But that job was an amazing job. And actually I love presenting and I love acting, but back then I wasn't able to do the two. You know, I'm not Bradley Walsh, where you were able to cross over. If I was presenting, I was never considered for acting because they thought I was presenting. And, you know, presenting did damage my acting when I eventually, because I kind of did Hollyoaks, left, did Loose Women, then I did 60 Minute Makeover, and I did lots of other bits for This Morning and different shows. And then I was kind of like, I really miss acting. And I had to go back to basics, really. I did loads of theatre then, which is where I think I really learned to act. When I left Hollyoaks, I remember saying to my agent, I'm not doing theatre. It's not in my, well, the reason I was saying I'm not doing theatre is because I'd never done it and I didn't know how to do it. And actually what I realise now as an actor, actress, that's where you really learn about characterisation and being able to go and do the same performance night after night and find truth in it and be able to entertain the audience is a real skill. And being able to dissect your character to that extent during rehearsals and through that period, that's where you really discover yourself as an actress. So it wasn't that I didn't want to do it was I didn't know how to do it. And like everything, I learned the hard way and just feet first in. And actually, I went to see 222 last night at the Empire. I love the Empire. I think we're really lucky that we have such a big theatre that brings such a wealth of different, you know, not that long ago, I was seeing a contemporary ballet there, a ballet there, which, you know, we're really lucky that we have that in Liverpool and big musical. And there was a part of me that I looked at the stage thinking, oh, if I could get paid decent money to do that, that is what I'd love to do regularly. But you know, it's difficult. You're on tour a lot of the time. I've got two children, I've got a husband who's amazing, but you know, there's a point in your kid's life where you actually need to be around. So, although I did theatre and I absolutely loved it, and I was still very much doing it when the world shut down with COVID. And my business partner, you know, he'll tell you a different story. He actually stalked me until I gave up and went into business with him. But the truth of you know, the matter is, the world was closing up, and there was no, in my mind, there was not going to be any acting around for a really long time. But why I thought it was good to set up a production company when everyone else wasn't, I have no idea. I like a challenge, Neil.
I mean it. Look, it seems to have worked, doesn't it? You know, so.
Well, I don't, you know what? I don't want to put rose-colored glasses on it because I don't know how much you know about our industry, but the industry is really tough at the moment, probably the toughest I've ever known it. So any of those actors out there that aren't getting, you know, recalls or aren't getting self-tapes, and you know, I'm constantly reading crew on LinkedIn, nobody's working. It is really tough. And I know sometimes it's easy to look at social media or look at somebody and think they're having an easier ride, and we're not. We're not at all. It's just we're so busy spinning plates trying to, you know, kind of get things off the ground that we probably don't have the kind of time to sit and talk about it as much. And I think that's why I wanted to be a producer, because I want to be in control of my own destiny. I think, like a lot of crew, waiting for the phone to ring, or as an actor or as a presenter, waiting for the phone to ring, you feel just so helpless, you know. But as a producer, you are the energy that's under those projects, and you are frantically trying to spin plates so I can employ people in my local area and I can work with all those amazing talents that I've been lucky enough to work with. But it is tough, and everybody's finding it tough. And I really hope people listening to this find comfort in knowing it isn't just them. Every producer, every production company, every commissioner, every broadcaster that I talk to want to be back in production and want to be employing people, and we hope that change is just around the corner. But it's tough. I've, you know, Sky laying off 1,000 people, Channel 4 on a commissioning freeze. But you know, we are in contact with these people, and it can't be like this forever. So,
No.
you know, we've all got to, it is going to be survival of the fittest. We've all
Yeah.
just got to keep hanging in until the tide turns.
Yeah. Well, fingers crossed. But so what we'll do then is we'll talk. We will move on to Grange Hill then, Terry, if that's okay. Because,
Yeah, of course.
and you've mentioned there about you had that, you let sort of left Hollyoaks and then Grange Hill was there. Was it? Did you have to audition for it, or was it a case of Phil Redmond saying, come and do this?
No, I don't think I did audition actually,
Right.
but you know, I was in the building. They knew what I was capable of.
Yeah.
And you know, I suppose that's the way Phil and Lex are. They just, you know, I was leaving Hollyoaks and there was another opportunity. It was a bit weird though, Neil, I've got to be honest, because it's obviously a kids' show.
Yeah.
I'd come from a show where I was the lead. You know, I was one of the leads. I was in
Yeah.
everything, and I loved that, and that had been my only experience in the acting world.
Right.
So then to go to a show like Grange Hill, where I was a bit part,
Yeah.
it was really hard. It
Yeah.
really took some shifting
Yeah,
in
I
my head,
imagine.
and when I was in the scene with the kids, and you know, really constantly reminding myself it's not about me, it's about
Yeah.
them.
Yeah.
But I had a great time, and it just meant that I had, I suppose, a bit of freedom to think about what would come after Grange Hill.
Right, yeah. Yeah, because you joined in series 28. It was
Did it, was it? Oh, good, just in case I need that.
went on air in 2005. Now, were you a fan of Grange Hill when you were a kid?
Yes. Oh my God,
Right.
who wasn't? We grew up with Grange Hill, and I think in my era it was like Zamo, and
Yeah.
I think that's what's so amazing about the different incarnations about Grange Hill, is that it managed time and time again to tap into that next generation of youth. And I think it was really important because they were talking about things that perhaps back in my day, we weren't that comfortable about talking about in the playground. So
Yeah.
I think it became such a cultural treasure, national treasure. I defy anyone to not say that it wasn't part of their youth, because like or loathe it, you know, you'd have, even if you didn't like it, you'd have heard it talked about
Yeah.
in the playground, which I think was really, you know, when you're making content for TV, that's what you want. You want people talking about it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And whenever I put an episode of the podcast out, I always in the week building up, I'll do a guess the guest competition. So I put picture clues out, and the first person to guess correctly gets the opportunity to ask a question for the to the next guest. So I've got a question from someone called Chris Matthews, who asked, and I think I know the answer to this, given the history you've told us already. When you were a kid, was it ever your ambition to appear on Grange Hill as a pupil?
Oh my God, when I was a kid, I didn't even know what I wanted to do. I mean, in fact, even as an adult, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I certainly never aspired to be a model. I kind of got discovered, started working, started earning money, decided that I was going to kind of give it a go, move to London and see if, you know, I could just get some money behind me whilst I was deciding what to do for a real career.
Right, okay.
And then years later, I was still modelling, thinking, this wasn't part of the plan. I thought
Yeah.
I needed some kind of career path. I thought, right, what am I good at? I'm good at talking. And then Tommy Boyd, do you remember Tommy Boyd?
Yeah.
So he was advertising to train up continuity presenters. So for people listening who don't know that, it was for the Children's Channel, and they're the people that will go, right, coming up next is da 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 da, and they'll do those little inserts in
Yeah.
between the shows. And I got it, and I was trained up by Tommy Boyd, and then
Wow.
became a Children's Channel presenter, and got my agent John Knowle, who actually I saw recently, which was just gorgeous to see him, because he took me on as a presenter. And it was in the era of, you know, it was the Caroline Flack stable, and it was the
Right.
Kate Thornton and the Davina McCall and Tess Daly, and we were all there at the same
Yeah.
time. So When I heard the news, I'd actually just contacted John about something else because I've kept in touch with him loosely over the years. And he'd responded on the morning that we found out about Caroline, and because she was kind of part of our stable, it was really sad. I obviously hadn't seen her for years, but I think in those early days, like with Hollyoaks, there's kind of a bond that you get with people. I mean, Kate, I contacted her completely out of the blue to see if I could go on White Wine Question Time. She was like, "Yeah, no problem." There's just that kind of real loyalty, I think, to that old school stable, wherever you were. I've been quite lucky. Sorry, I digressed a bit,
That's all right. Not a
but.
problem. Not a problem. All right. So I'll bring you back then to
Yeah,
Greendale.
do
Right.
know that.
Okay.
Listen,
Yeah.
I will go off on a tangent. You have to keep me on
So
a tight leash.
we met Miss Adams, who was a geography teacher. Was geography your thing?
No, and despite now revising with two boys, it's still not my thing. Not really. I think often at school, your thing becomes about which teacher inspires you the most. Because at school I wasn't good at languages, and now because my French teacher was a dinosaur and she was just so boring, but clearly I have an aptitude for it because I speak Italian. So, I think we're definitely, and the same with my boys, they definitely enjoy the subjects more that they can connect with the teacher. Not always the subject matter. So no, geography is not my thing.
I mean, just remember, as Miss Adams said, geography means that you never have to be lost again. And
Well,
she,
we don't now because we have iPhone Google, which was probably
brilliant.
a bit after Miss Adams.
Yeah, and Miss Adams was also not only a geography teacher; she was the form tutor of Togger, Abel, and Andy, who were like the Liverpool version of Tucker, Benny, and Alan. And the first scene, she kind of explained to them
About careers. Was it
how
about
it, yeah,
the careers?
year nine and their options. Well
And I
done,
say something like, you can't, because he wants to be a professional footballer. Yeah. And I say something like, well, that's okay, but you need a backup.
That's right. That's exactly what these said. Togger and Abel wanted to be footballers, and they didn't really need GCSEs, was their argument.
You know what? They're probably representative, Neil, of some of the kids in school today.
Well.
I want to be on The Only Way Is Essex,
Yeah.
or I want to be a wag, or yeah,
Want to be a
probably.
pod or I want to be a podcaster. No,
Or an influencer.
don't be a
Influencer.
podcaster, kids. Don't do
Yeah.
that. So that's it. Yeah, Miss Adams is saying, you know, like, we're gonna have to work cut out with you lot. And she was right. Now, it was also the series when Alex Pickering was getting bullied. I don't know if you remember that the bullying storyline in that was it was horrendous, to be honest. Josh played Alex was on not so long ago, and he was on here for 2 hours because we had that much to talk about. But the storyline was it was horrific, to be honest. It showed how it goes from being such a small thing, just building and building and building. And right at the start of that, Miss Adams is involved because one of the girls, Chloe, had pinched his remote control car and his bag, and she gave the car back to him in the middle of the class. But it was Alex that got told off by Miss Adams for having it out. But it's good because it's just showing you how quite often kids won't say anything either if they get told when it wasn't them. They especially if they're like the ones who are being bullied, they're not going to say anything because
No.
they want an easy life, don't they? They don't want
Yeah.
any bother. And it was then he got into trouble. Miss Adams confiscated the car, and again, that's just something that just gets on top of him. Like I say, for part of that storyline, it's really, I think, important to show how it goes from being a small thing to eventually what it, because it was, as I've said, it was a horrific thing that happened. And I don't know if you remember as well, Tanya Young went on the radio and having a rant about school uniform, and she said something about Miss Adams. I don't know if you remember that. Miss Adams
No,
looked.
I don't.
Miss
I
Adams looks like she wears a wig, and if
Thanks,
she
Tanya.
and if she doesn't, then she should. Was the
Aren't they just so kind, these
as well.
kids?
Yeah, aren't they just yeah. And again, the bullying storyline, Miss Adams asked the class to draw a picture of Europe, I think it was. But Alex had just drawn like a mess and it was black and it was squiggles all over. And it was Miss Adams who asked him why he'd done it and if he was okay. And he said that that's what was in his mind. And Miss Adams was saying to him, like, you know, if he needs to talk to anyone, then she's there. But he didn't tell her anything. But I always think, watching it back through adult eyes, Miss Adams is the type of teacher that kids want to have. You know what I mean? They go in and she's not overly strict. She's strict when she needs to be, but she's going to listen to you. And I do like that as the character of Miss Adams.
Yeah, I think bullying is a really important topic to cover. I was bullied terribly in my last year of junior school and my first year of senior school. And it can really shape you and not always in a good way. So I think the schools now, I'd like to think they're much more aware, and they have things in place to deal with that or deal with children's mental health. I think it's so much more spoken about now than it ever was when I was younger.
Definitely. Yeah.
I just remember walking up the road with my dad and I just desperately didn't want to go in school. And I mean, I was bullied for 2 years and quite horrifically. Mm-hmm. And so it's always been my little pet fear with my boys, you know, just to make sure that we have a zero tolerance. Because even as an adult now, probably not quite as much because I can rationalise those childlike feelings. But definitely, if I think someone said something nasty or, you know, for that split second, my stomach flips and then the adult obviously takes over and goes, well, it's their problem, not mine. But, you know, I think children are in a better place now because mental health is so on everybody's agenda of priority. But, you know, that was years ago and Grange Hill was dealing with it. So I think the subject matters that they choose to cover were really relevant and they were always handled really well.
Yeah, definitely. I do want to talk to you about the adventure trip. I don't know if you remember that, going away and they were doing those all like hunters. They had to hunt for the food. There was
It was probably in the back of Chilwell. So it probably didn't feel like going away. I vaguely remember a campfire. But I can't imagine any child being able to hunt for their food, no. Can you?
I mean, there's a cracking bit where they're out hunting for food and they see some rabbits, right? But it's clearly stock footage from, like, you know, Planet Earth or something like that. You watch it and you just think, there's no kid watching that is going to think, oh, there's rabbits 20 metres away from them.
No.
Unbelievable.
Kids now, if there was no Uber Eats, I mean, they'd have some kind of heart attack, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Rabbits. I mean, what kind of romantic storyline were they thinking about that?
Brilliant. We need to talk as well about My Fair Lady, which was the school drama project that they were doing. Now, you've just pulled a face there because I'm not going to mention that bit for a while yet, so don't worry.
Well, I don't know. You're going to surprise me because despite me remembering my first scene, I'm definitely ropey. Some of these nuggets you've managed to uncover.
So,
yes.
So Miss Adams was working on the drama project of My Fair Lady along with Mr. Malachi.
I know exactly what you're talking about now.
And it had been voted for by the school, but it became a bit apparent that Mr. Malachi had rigged the vote because he wanted it to be the project. And it was going to be a film. Mr. Spencer had worked out that he'd rigged the vote. So he started making his own film about Mr. Malachi. And he films him trying to talk to Miss Adams. But Miss Adams was in a rush and it looked like she didn't want to talk to him. Spencer then put a flower on Miss Adams' desk but made her think that it had come from Mr. Malachi. She was happy to get it. Spencer's filming it. And she said to him, well, I might return the compliments to you one day, which then Mr. Malachi knew nothing about it, but he acted like he did and he runs, he punches the air, and he says, I've still got it. And, you know, like, but all that's caught on camera. Now, Ed Baker Julie, like, played that character so well, I think. You know, he was so eccentric but brilliant with it as well at the same time. I mean, what was he like to work with, like?
I mean, my memory of all the adult characters in Grange Hill were they were all lovely. And I think Mersey TV, they didn't really do drama queens or divas, or that very, very quickly got stamped out. And my time at Grange Hill, working with the adult characters, was always a really nice one. I mean, sometimes the kids could be challenging just because they get a bit bored, wouldn't they, waiting around. There's a lot of waiting around acting. So, and not that they were naughty, but they just get bored, start chatting. The noise levels got quite high. I suppose that was the biggest difference working on a very young show to something like Hollyoaks, was, I mean, God, Nick Pickard in Hollyoaks can sleep on a washing line. He'd lie down on set in between takes and just have a little shut eye. I mean, there was no chance of that in Grange Hill. The decibels were really high. But no, everyone was lovely, Neil. It was a nice place to work.
And then that leads us on to the film premiere. And throughout that episode, there's all sorts of like flirty comments and looks between Miss Adams and Mr. Malachy. And then that then leads to Miss Adams telling Mr. Malachy that she liked the film and she liked the one that Spencer had made about him as well. And whoever had made him man of the match, she said. And then later on, she said she needed to talk to Mr. Malachy about his general conduct that evening. And there's a scene where Tanya is chasing Togger onto the stage, and Togger pulls the curtain down, and we saw Miss Adams and Mr. Malachy in a bit of a clinch, shall we say, behind.
Yeah, I get all the fun. I always get to kiss people. It's because of my husband's very easygoing and he gets it.
But that's never mentioned again. It was never sort of mentioned
Oh,
again,
yeah.
yeah. Because then we that
Well,
was
it's probably because they didn't. It's probably because they didn't want to take it anywhere. That,
yeah.
and I think that's the huge. That's the big difference. Being in something like Grange Hill, that was more so the kids could react to it.
Yeah.
Because it's never really about us. All
No.
we are there for is to facilitate a storyline
Yeah.
with the kids,
Yeah, definitely.
which I suppose was the biggest shift when I went across there.
Yeah, I think that because that sort of happened when they went, certainly when it was at Mersey, that sort of
Yeah.
happened because teachers had big storylines before up until then. I mean, when it moved from London to Liverpool, the last episode there was a wedding of two of the teachers,
Oh, okay.
and I think that was a big change when it was
Yeah.
Liverpool. It was the fact
Well,
that.
I think you've got to kind of think about your demographic. It was predominantly kids that watched it, and they're not going to really, they don't really have interest in what adults are doing. It's all about that, that takeout from the student life, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And then we moved to series 29, and you were only in this one for about three or four episodes. You weren't in it a great deal, but the first part you're in, Tanya Young came to school wearing an inflatable bra, don't you? And
Even existed.
it was Miss Adams who had to have the talk with her about not wearing it. And Tanya had been attacked or almost kidnapped in an earlier series. And again, we've got that sort of side of Miss Adams having the chat with Tanya. Is this a reaction to what's happened? Are you doing it because? And
Which often, Neil, it can be. Sometimes with any kind of behavior, adult or child, you kind of have to scratch a little bit deeper to
definitely.
that particular behavior, because there's invariably always something more going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, definitely. And Tanya actually says, well, if it is a reaction, shouldn't you be supporting me? To which Miss Adams, ever a diplomat, says, look, we're getting into areas neither of us are qualified to talk about here, so just follow the school rules, please.
I don't want anything to do with that. It's not my department. Love it.
Definitely. And then there was Togger's younger brother, Tigger, and we've mentioned Alex and Ed. They were sort of like the next generation, and they were always getting up to all kinds as well. And there's a bit where they were all pretending to wet themselves. Don't know if
Oh,
you remember
gosh.
that one. And The lads spray threw a load of water on Alex's trousers. Miss Adams had stopped them from going to the toilet, but then she saw the state his trousers were in, so she let him go. But there'd been some thefts in the school, and I don't know if you remember this. It turned out it was Chloe and Andrea that had been stealing. Now,
No.
Chloe, Mia Smith, like when I've watched this back through adult eyes, I just think she's brilliant because she makes you hate her. Like,
Yeah, I think that's a real talented actress, isn't
yeah,
it? To
definitely.
actually be able to evoke those kind of emotions from an audience.
Yeah, definitely. And
Yeah.
what she did in that episode was she, Chloe and Andrea had fallen out with Sammy because Sammy had sort of realized, you know, what they were like, and she was kind of growing up. And they said, "Well, we'll be your mate if you admit to doing the stealing." So she did. She went and told Miss Adams that it was her. But then Chloe and Andrea were like, "Well, that's your problem." But they'd filmed her telling Miss Adams.
Oh, kids are cruel, aren't they?
And they were laughing at her, but then Miss Adams caught them, and you know, it was all good for Sammy in the end, and obviously gave them detentions for bullying. And then we never saw Miss Adams again
No, Miss
after
Adams went
that.
off to marry her husband, as
Right.
in Terry went off to marry Sean.
Right.
And that I think that's what I remember overwhelmingly, just like going, are we nearly finished now? I've got to get up to Edinburgh. I've got a wedding to be at. Yeah, do you know, I think for me it was nice to kind of do the time that I did there. But you know, the reason I left Hollyoaks is because I wanted to go back down to London and experience something new. And I think it was quite difficult coming from a show where I was in everything to go into a show where you know, we were constantly the facilitator, although I was really grateful of the experience because it was a really good transition after Hollyoaks. But you know, and Hollyoaks still is, you know, has been a great job, and Grange Hill was a lovely job, and I've been really lucky to do some really interesting jobs. But yeah, it was the right time to go. And unlike Hollyoaks, I never went back to Grange Hill.
No. Okay, so we'll talk about the other stuff that you've done there, because obviously, you know, you've carried on acting, and for someone that said they were no good at it, yeah, that your words, not mine. So just looking at some of the things that you did, the first thing that I've got down was something called Race, and you played a character called Kate Jackson.
Do you know what? That was actually more a giving something back. I
Right.
turned up to the audition, and it was actually a student project, which I would never normally do.
Right.
But I just thought, do you know what? These kids are the next generation of filmmakers. I'm here now. And I did that, but I've done, that was probably one of the very, very, very early projects I did.
Right.
Because once, like I said previous, if you keep that bit in this interview, when I left Hollyoaks and I'd done lots of presenting, but when I decided to come back to acting, I really felt like I needed to tread the boards and learn my craft. So did a lot of theatre. But I was still quite keen to try and keep my hand on screen. So independent film seemed like quite a good place to go, because I think with independent film, you get the opportunity way more than you do with mainstream to play characters that you probably wouldn't ordinarily be cast in.
Right, yeah.
You know, so I've done some jobs which I've kind of thought, oh God, why did I do that? And I have to remember, I did it because I wanted to challenge myself. The fact that I hope nobody sees it and it never sees the light of day is another story. But I still think with every experience I've had, it's made me a better actress, which has then in turn my that experience has informed me as a producer. So, you know, whilst the end product, in actual fact, some of those end products are why I became a producer, because
Right.
I thought instead of just criticizing other people's work, go and do it yourself.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not happy with the end product, then be that person that is control of the end product.
Yeah.
Because I think it's very quick and easy, particularly, you know, the internet gave us great freedom, but it really allowed keyboard warriors to have a voice. So it's really easy to be vilified in the industry. And I think people should stop and think before they are as mean as they can be. And you know, you try and do it yourself. You try and get a project into production yourself before you start telling everybody how shit it is. You know, and have a little bit of consideration for the 12 hours these crew have and this team have spent in the piss rain in the back of beyond. You know, I think the people that are quick to criticize don't really understand what goes on behind the scenes. So yeah, I've done some indies that I hope nobody ever sees, and I've done some which I'm really proud of. But definitely as a producer, I want to be really mindful of not making those mistakes, because although as an actress I probably learned from them, as an actress going forward, it definitely damaged me doing things like, you know, the student projects or the projects with no money or the projects doing accents, which I know I'm rubbish at and I should never have done, you know. But I'm much more conscious as a producer. But you know, I wouldn't have known those lessons had I've not made the mistakes as an actress.
So just on a couple of those things then that you've mentioned, so you did something called the left-hand path with Brian Capron. Now, obviously,
I did,
Brian
yeah.
Capron was Grain Jill as well.
Yes, but wasn't he also East
He
Coronation
was
Street?
Coronation Street as well.
Yeah, but I think that was a short film, wasn't it? The last,
That's right. And also, I wanted to talk to you about, now this might be one of the things you've just been mentioning, I don't know, Cabin 28.
Yes, that is one of the things I mentioned.
Now, I'll be
Yeah.
honest, I've only watched the trailer for that and I was terrified, genuinely.
Do you know, I did that. Do you know, sadly, the filmmaker's passed away now, and he was only really young, Andrew. And he came to see me. I was on tour with a play that I produced, and I was in it, called Revlon Girl. Really beautiful play. Actually, the writer went on to be nominated for an Olivier. It was a really gorgeous play, really talented people involved. And I met Andrew there. I think I met him there, and he approached me. Now, Andrew had made a business model of making kind of horror films on a shoestring, but they got distributed in Walmart in America. And he was very known for this particular thing. But it, you know, it she was an American. I'd never played American. I found it really hard. The American accent is a real, if you don't have the ability, there's some accents that I can do and I can do okay and I can pass with it, you know, London, Northern, Yorkshire. But an American, unless you can really nail it brilliantly, it can be a bit ropey. And I have to say, some of my American was a bit ropey, but it was a really violent, it was based on a true story. And and it was a lovely crew, and he was a lovely man, and he died very young. It was really, really sad. So I think for me, whilst my accent let me down a little bit, I think I have very fond memories of being able to work with him before he passed.
I mean, one of my questions was, did you have to use an American accent on that one? And you've said that anyway.
Oh
But
God, it was awful. I don't even watch it again. It was so, my accent was so bad.
you know when you're filming something like that, is the atmosphere different when you're filming it
Yes.
to what it would
Yeah,
be?
because actually it was really violent, and I think because we knew it was based on a true story about a family that were terrorized and murdered over one night, I think it was really harrowing, because unlike other works of fiction, you know, it's a work of fiction, this, we knew that a family had actually gone through this. So it was really, really difficult. The torture scenes were really hard.
Okay. So we'll move on because you mentioned about being a producer and stuff, and we'll met was it a Break? Was that the first one in 2020?
I was actually approached as an actress, so I'm in Break as well. And so Michael Elkin sent me the script, and I was really busy at the time. I said, give me time to read it. And I just happened to be stuck somewhere, so I read it really quickly. Brilliant script. Loved the part of Kathy. And he said, you know, we got on really, really well. And as things progressed, he said, would you consider producing it? And I said, well, I've never really produced before, but like anything in my career, you know, I throw myself in feet first. And the things I can't do, I learn how to do, or I bring on people that can do it. And there was an old friend of mine, Dean, who I'd worked on a short film of him with Paul Moran. So I was in that with Paul Moran, and it was a lovely short film, and Dean was the producer. And I'd always kind of thought, oh, one day I'd really like to work with you. So I brought him on board Break. And it was a great film, great production. It was the first thing I produced, but we raised the finance and we lost the finance and we raised it again. And then COVID struck. So we just organized this big West End premiere, and then we were hit by COVID, and nobody knew we'd still be talking about being locked up 2 years later. And but some of the investors had been with us for a long time, so we had to release the film. So we did the first ever drive-in premiere out of the first lockdown. But the markets were still really nervous. I think it's taken a long time, and we are still very much recovering from the catastrophe that was COVID. But I'm really proud of Break. I think it's a great film. And my now business partner came on board as one of the sponsors at the UK premiere. So he had an opportunity to see how I worked, what I was capable of. And so when the world closed down, we set up Buffalo Dragon, which is the production company that we have in the Northwest.
Brilliant.
Well, we've got an office in the Northwest and one in Wales.
Okay, so just on Break, when I was looking at that, I mean that cast as well. The cast is tremendous, like Sam Gittins and David Yip and Rutger Hauer and Jamie Foreman and Adam Deacon and people like that. Now, obviously, you've worked in the industry for a long time, but do you get starstruck when you meet people like that?
You know what? Not really. I think with Rutger, that was his last film before he passed away. With Rutger, it wasn't so much starstruck. It's just that when you have actors of that kind of level, there's a certain expectation, and things need to be right. So as a producer, it's more about making sure, they've got everything they need to do the best job that they can do. So I don't get starstruck with him. I got starstruck once when I met Kevin Spacey, because this was all before the scandal. And I just seen Usual Suspects, which is one of my favorite films. And I was in the Met Bar, and it was after one of the awards due. And I was with my gorgeous, one of my best friends, Shaznay Lewis, who, by the way, is bringing her album out in May. So make sure you buy
Brilliant.
it. And I was with her, and we were in the Met Bar, and I think she just met him, or anyway, she introduced me to him. And I was just like, that was the only time that I was like, oh my God, I've just watched you in Usual Suspects, and you were phenomenal. Because, aside all the scandal, which I'm not going to go into because I don't know enough of the truth about it, that was an incredible film. And he was incredible in it. And so that's the one and only time I've got starstruck. When we did our second feature through Buffalo Dragon, which has just come out on Home Entertainment, so it's out on all the usual platforms, it's called Bowling Shoes. And the first film we did, which was called The Stranger in Our Bed, is a psychological thriller. So that was a commercial decision. It was based on a USA Today bestselling book. We knew there was an existing audience. It was to dip our toes into the market. And we shot that when the world was in lockdown. So, none of these free COVID tests. We were having to draft a nurse from Liverpool to test all our crew on a regular, it was a really difficult shoot because of all of that underlining COVID, which none of us understood. And then the second feature we wanted to do was we wanted it to have a festival life. And that was written and directed by the lovely Ian Poulston Davies, who played one of the baddies in Hollyoaks. So I've known him forever. Now, going back to Starstruck, I wasn't starstruck, but when I met and worked with Timothy Spall, and I just saw an actor at his level, he's BAFTA nominated, recently BAFTA nominated again for Sixth Commandment. He is an absolute lesson to us all because he has done massive studio films, he still does indies. He works with new directors like Ian because he believes in giving back. He is the nicest, most humblest gentleman. And when we were at the premiere, because we decided to do our big premiere in Liverpool, because I'm in the Northwest, and we were adamant that we weren't going to succumb to a London premiere. They're all going, you're not going to get the press up, you won't get the talent. Anyway, Tim's been a massive support, and he came up, and I did the Q&A. And that was kind of like the end of my journey with Tim, really. And just at the end, I said, I've got to be honest, Tim, you are the nicest gentleman I have had the pleasure to meet or work with in the business. And he just went, "Well, you've got to be, haven't you, Terry?" I went, "You and I both know people at your level do not adhere to that rule." So I am championing you at being not only an incredible talent, but a really bloody decent human being. And I think he was a lesson to me going forward. No matter who we get, that there has to, this is a tough job that we're in, and we're all doing the best that we can do. There's no room for divas. I understand that talent needed things to be a certain way to be able to get the optimum out of them. And as a producer, I want to make sure I facilitate that. But respect on set and humility to people that are working at, kind of entry level positions, whether they're entry level positions or they're HODs, that respect needs to be all through all department. And that is the one thing that I will never tolerate on set, because I think we just need to be nice. And I think, gosh, I know we mentioned the Caroline Flack thing earlier, but we need to learn from scenarios like that. We
Definitely.
need to be kind to each other.
Definitely.
None of us are saving lives here. We are making entertainment shows for the masses. And if we can't be kind to each other, no matter what walk of life we're in, we don't deserve this beautiful gift of a job and this lovely industry that we're in.
Yeah, no, do you know what? I fully agree with you. I'm a scout leader as well in my spare time. And a few years ago, I was lucky enough to go to West Virginia for the World Scout Jamboree, and they had like this big. It was called a tree, and you it was metal, and you got to write on aluminium leaves, and everyone was writing all these like, real deep, meaningful messages, and I just wrote, "Just be nice," like that, and that's like my motto for life is just be nice,
It really is important.
Definitely, definitely. So, if I can just ask you then, when you are the producer on a movie, and it is something like Bowling Shoes, do you have a list of who you want to play those parts straight away, or do you leave that
Yeah,
up to someone
there's lots of
else?
well, there's lots of things that inform your decision. Interestingly, before I was lucky enough to be mentored by Dean, who has been my producing partners on a few of the films. My understanding of who would be great in a film is very different to what I learned to be who you need in your
Right.
film.
Okay, yeah.
Because the first thing a sales agent will say to you, "Who's your name? Do they have international appeal? Will people in the US know who they are?" And just because I may love, gosh, who's a big soap actress? One of the big established, Clementine from EastEnders. Just because I might love her doesn't mean to say that she is going to be a name that is going to be able to sell a movie around the world. So a lot of, and I'm not saying I like that, because I think the problem is with that, there's so many talented actresses that don't get an opportunity because they don't have an international appeal. And I think that's a shame. And because I've been very pigeonholed and stereotyped throughout my career, I'm definitely a producer that looks outside the box. I will look at musical theatre actresses, and I will look at people from soaps. And because I don't necessarily believe just because you haven't done a film, it doesn't mean to say you're not good enough to be in a film, or your technique as an actress isn't suitable for film, because film's much smaller in terms of your, musical theatre is very big. Soap is a lot less so, and film's even less so. So, sometimes that some of the criticism is that, MT and soap actors are just a bit too big. Well, then that's down to the director to pull them down. If they can act, they can act. So I'm definitely a producer that does think outside the box, but I'm not a naive to the business. I know as an actress, I made mistakes which affected my the role, the kind of roles that I was being
I get
offered.
you.
And I don't want to make that mistake as a producer. So I've recently brought on an agent, which is a brilliant agent at Curtis Brown, Hannah Young, if anyone wants to employ me. And they're one of the oldest literary agents in the UK, and I want the opportunity to be able to tap into some of their writers and some of their directors and some of their acting talent, because they bought agencies like Markham and Froggatt and another really big agencies, and now I'm in their stable as a producer. Not only do I get to use other people in their stable, but also I've just got that one person that's watching my back and making sure I don't make the same mistakes I made as an actress.
Yeah, and as a producer, do you make sure you get a part in your films
Well, no, actually,
as
no. The stranger in our bed, gorgeous Samantha Lee Howe, who's the writer. It was based on a book she wrote, Becky, for
Yeah.
me in
All
mind.
right, okay.
And actually, because Becky was the second lead, I found it really hard producing, because when I do anything, I do it wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
And days I kept saying to Giles Alderson, the director, who was gorgeous, I just said, I can't do my scenes today, I'm just too busy. And so with Bowland Shoes, because it was a bigger budget again, I just said, listen, I don't want to be in it. I want to focus on my producing. I think I'm a better producer than I am an actress. And they were like, come on, please, please, just have one little scene, one little scene. And right up until the night before, I was like, I really shouldn't be doing this. I really shouldn't be doing this. But it was one day. It was with Tim Sport. It was with Matt Horn. And I thought, oh, one day's not going to hurt. And actually, retrospectively, to be able to watch someone like Timothy Spall's process on set was really special, and I'm really glad I did it. But no, I have no particular desires, because sometimes people send projects to me and go, oh, and there's a lovely lead for you. No, because actually, if I'm doing a job as a producer, it's all consuming. And for me to step off and be an actress, I need somebody else to hold the reins, which, to be honest, Neil, I do like producing in twos. I'm not somebody. I'm definitely a team player, and I'm always looking for other producers to work with. But no, I've got a part in Supercell, which comes out on Netflix, but I shot that last January, January 23. I've got a rom-com that I'm trying to get away, which is also written mostly by Ian Poulston-Davies, but the other writer I'm not allowed to talk about, because yeah. But that's a rom-com set in Ireland, which is gorgeous. And I've got a comedy of Ian's, which is just amazing, which we're in talks with broadcasters. And I mean, there's lots of really excited, because I want to employ local people. I don't want to keep pulling my trolley along, my little suitcase along the streets of London. I want to make content in the Northwest, and I'm really passionate about using Northwest talent on and off the screen.
Brilliant, brilliant. Well, if you ever need a short, bald, and overweight person, you know where to come to there.
I
Right. Okay. So you mentioned earlier on about how you're still in touch with people from Hollyoaks. Are you still in touch with anyone from your days on Grange Hill?
Actually, no, there was one of the young guys, and I can't remember his name, because he worked with a colleague of a friend of mine recently. I'm not in touch with him, but not really, because it was such a, although I was in a few series, as an adult, you're not in it enough to cultivate relationships. You dip it. Hollyoaks, we live together, we work together, you go out together. That's when you cultivate relationships. But in Grange Hill, you just don't work with people long and hard enough to have the opportunity to cultivate relationships and stay in touch. It's a massive commitment with any friendship if you do it properly, but you need those building blocks in the first instance.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, we are coming towards the end, Terry, and I've got a few questions to ask you. They're all Grange Hill related. Okay. So, in sort of like the last year or so, there's been talk of a Grange Hill movie in the works. Phil Redmond is written a. Kellen Jones is is involved in making it. Sarah Sugarman is going to be involved directing it. What do you think of the idea of a Grange Hill movie?
I think as long as it's executed right, I think it's a great idea. I think as you've obviously got to speak to the current audience, but I think the brand is such a strong brand, and obviously I'm incredibly loyal to the Redmonds, and so if they were to do a movie, I want it to do well. And I do think the Grange Hill brand is still very strong. There's not many people that don't know about it, and as long as the narrative can tap into that audience, there's no reason why it can't do well.
No. And if you were asked, would we see a return of Miss Adams?
In a heartbeat.
Definitely brilliant.
In
That's
a
what we
heartbeat.
want.
A chance to work with the Redmonds again, and Kellen Jones, I'd bloody bite your
Excellent.
arm off. Kellen is a friend, by the way, so I'm also
Great.
very loyal to
Yeah. Brilliant. Okay. So you said earlier on that you were a fan of Green Hill when you were younger. So who was your favourite character then in Grangeville?
Tucker.
Right.
Tucker,
Brilliant.
and to be honest, for whatever reason, he's probably the only one I remember. So
Right.
it must have left an impression on me.
Right,
So
okay.
that's why I'm saying him, because the others didn't leave an impression.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you this question, but based on that last answer, I don't know if you'd be able to give me an answer. If you couldn't have played Miss Adams, is there another character that you would have liked to have played from any time on Grange Hill?
I think I would have liked to have played a female version of Zamo.
Right, okay.
Actually, he was a favourite character. Him and Tucker, I
Yeah.
like those two. And
Yeah, brilliant.
actually, I like Rowley, the big, the big.
Yeah.
Oh, I loved Rowley.
See, it's all coming back now, aren't they? They're all coming back
I know, it
to
is. Thank God, he's in there somewhere.
know. Brilliant. Okay. So then the final question, Terry, then is why do you think there's still such affection for Grange Hill?
Because I think it was really revolutionary. I think, that's where Phil is really prided himself in the kind of content that he made. When, Grange Hill was talking about things with kids that no other program was talking about. Brookside had the first lesbian kiss, and, the kind of stuff that they dealt with, nobody else was talking about. And I think that the problem is now, because they were such revolutionary shows, sometimes I think shows now just try and be shocking without actually having the heart. And whereas, so I think he was quite pioneering at that time.
Brilliant. Well, Terry, thank you so much for coming
Thank
on.
you.
It's been great, and not just talking about your time on Grange Hill, but your other time in the industry as well. And it's been really interesting talking to you as well. So, good luck with Bowling Shoes. Is it up for an award? Did I read somewhere or have I read
Well,
somewhere?
actually, it's won quite a lot of
Right.
awards.
Yeah.
And now we're just waiting for two biggies. So I will be shouting about it on my social media and on Buffalo Dragon's social media.
Brilliant.
So if it needs votes, get your listeners to vote for
Yeah,
it when the time's right.
don't worry. I'll definitely do that. Definitely do that. So,
Great.
thanks again for coming
Thank
on.
you, Neil.
It's been
Lovely
great
to
talking
speak to
to you.
you.
And anyone that's listening, I'll speak to you next time. Cheers. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye bye.